Blog Talk Radio.
About that time, they asked me, where was I going, you know? I said, well, you have to be reasonable. You know, I've never been away from home before. And besides, they gave me a good deal. And I think that Angadelica is, you know, a nation that, you know, I would like to live in.
With your host, Brother Charles, and I'm joined by my lovely wife, Jalavet. And say hello, Jalavet.
Hello, Jalavet.
All right, we're back after a very long hiatus.
Yes, a very, very extensive break, but one that was very necessary. And we are back.
Right.
And I'm excited about that.
Glad you are. This week, we are featuring Professor Ezra Aharon's first book, Pond Sovereignty, subtitled Sharpened Perspectives on Americanization, Africa, War, and Reparations. And we are going to feature a particular just topic in the book from the second chapter, I believe. And it's the title of the discussion is Prioritizing Black Lives and Causes.
How appropriate is that?
Very. But this section really, you know, helps us to clarify and focus.
Yeah.
You know, what's important to us? You know, how do we spend our energy, resources, to accomplish things that we think are important as it relates to being culturally integrated into a society that has done nothing to benefit us.
Right.
So we're spending time, you know, demonstrating, you know, petitioning, voting, fighting wars, laying down our lives for various issues or causes to be considered the same or equal to a people in a society that rejects that notion in action, though they may accept it in word.
In public, anyway.
That's what I'm saying, in word. They'll say it, right, and that's a means of psychological warfare.
Right, I'm saying they say that in public, but we know in private.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, they say the opposite in private, too, but I mean, you know, they just say, oh, you know, like, yeah, this is the equal rights for this, you know, that's they say that, so we'll shut up.
Right. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps already.
Right. And stop, you know, y'all are whacking. Why don't you just go kill yourselves? Please don't kill yourself because I really need your slave labor.
I know, that's right.
You know, they see that double speak. You know, I hear, you know, some of the racists say, you Negroes just kill yourselves. Well, and then, you know, y'all should leave our country. No, don't go. We won't let you leave. And why are you occupying and invading Africa if you want us to leave so bad? Why don't you just have free passage and subsidies to help black folks leave America?
Right. One is gone so bad, you know. Right. Go back to Africa. I'll help you pack. No, you won't.
No, you won't. No. Because there are no white people giving black folks money to resettle outside of America.
Right.
It's not available. So all that's talk, too. The truth is they want us here as tertiary class citizens.
Right, because once that all that immigration stuff happens, we're not even second class citizens anymore.
Right.
We will be third.
Right. We will third class citizens here.
Right.
And any, you know, black group, you know, and black bourgeoisie groups or other aspiring black bourgeoisie people telling you can make it great here, you can have a great life. Those people have sold themselves. They've sold their identity for, you know, nothing.
Right.
Yeah. So,
all right.
I won't just read it straight out like I have been, but I'm going to just, you know, kind of, you know, just read just different parts of it.
Okay.
And we'll indulge ourselves.
Okay.
In these sections. He opens on page 45. He says, society is now legally integrated. But because the battlefield is in the mind and not in the legislative reforms, we have not yet dealt with the real sources of our problems. A main source of many problems is that the idealism associated with unity has caused us to ignore the lessons of history and the truer character of America. This false sense of unity certainly benefits Euro-Americans, but it is unwise for us to pretend that we share the same some sort of sameness with them that transcends the truth of history. It would be a beautiful thing to see unity in America and throughout the world. However, this is unity is not necessarily predicated upon sameness.
Right.
Over the sacrificing of our history in exchange for a fabricated sameness has not unified us with Euro-America or with ourselves. Now, I just have to deal with that last sentence. He says, you know, the sacrifice of our history in exchange for this fabricated sameness. That's nobody does that.
Right.
I mean, you may see other ethnic groups talk about being American as well as their other culture. And while there is some selling out involved in that, and I would say the Africans in America have been pressured into selling out everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think at this stage of the game, we have demonstrated our failure to learn our lessons in history. To still be talking about being real Americans and equal and trying to have the pretense that we have socially and political equality with in the American colonial establishment is a severe delusionment.
Right. Three.
Yeah. You got anything else you want to say on that?
Well, I agree, and I like the way he put that because, one of the main issues with what we're dealing with right now and what we discuss oftentimes is that illusion of inclusion.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, that's a catchphrase. It's, you know, it's catchy, not a catchphrase, but it's catchy and that. But if you really look at that, then you become increasingly aware that there has been a washing of our brains over the years. And you have to wonder, on such a mass scale, with that kind of mass, you know, delusion, how do you reverse that?
Right.
It seems so large, so big, you know?
Yes, it is. But it's so simple, yet so vast, because we are culturally brainwashed and saturated in self-alienation, into Euro-European worship.
Right.
And, you know, once we started becoming more aware of how we've been conditioned to worship European culture and whatnot, and we, you know, recoiled from it. A lot of people looked at us like, "Why aren't you partaking in the sacraments?"
Right.
Of the faith.
Right. We make excuses. You know, I hate to just jump right into the whole, you know, Trayvon Martin thing, but this is, you know, very, integral to with us right now. It's very important. You know, it's interesting that there's this big push to do various things. Some people have ideas of boycotting this or the other thing or what have you. And what is most troubling for me is when I see people saying, you know, if you boycott Florida, do you know how many black people are going to lose their jobs? You know, tugging at the heartstrings while manipulating.
Yeah.
You know, while manipulating. And, you know, Neely Fuller said it best. I know you and a few other people totally agree with the way that he put it when he just, you know, he said, you know, we're stupid. And so we're so easily controlled by emotionalism. Oh, so they say those things. Oh, we shouldn't boycott this because, you know, think of the old lady who, you know, walks 10 blocks to the bus and she's supporting, you know, 7 children and, you know, she's a little old lady who lives in the shoe. And if you boycott that, then she's not going to have a job anymore. And who's going to feed her and her 12 children, for heaven's sake? And that's all it takes for us. And I think part of it is that we're easily manipulated. But then the other part is to not do anything is it meets the qualification of our laziness, our desire to not be uncomfortable. We've given so much to try to be quote-unquote comfortable and to fit in. And are you saying that someone may be harmed? But for our cause, someone being inconvenienced or harmed is out of the question. But for their cause, someone being harmed, it's just, you know, that's a casualty of war. That's what we have to do. Freedom isn't free.
But, you know, people like to follow the direction of certain opinion makers. And I always look at it as what they're saying is they saying, nigga, who the hell are you that we should listen to? Who died and made you general? So, while, you know, you ever hear people, they like try to criticize you for your conscious changing or your, you know, observations and say, you know, you just an armchair revolution. You don't matter. They try to make you feel insignificant and say, you ought to get out there and do something. And get out and do what? You want me to do what? So you can point at me on TV and say, well, you ain't doing that, not there doing that. You know, or you know, the point they want to do is minimize the significance or consequence of your action, your activity.
Right. I think so that we can. It all boils down to nothing's going to work anyway.
It's not that so much. I mean, that's what they're trying to make you feel about what you're doing. Whichever you're doing is ineffective. You're impotent. That's what they're trying to say to you.
I think that they're saying not that you're. Well, yes, you're impotent, but more importantly, they're saying that this monstrosity that these people have set up is impervious to you, Negro.
The reason why I disagree with that is because the SCLC had people getting hit by water hoses and bitten by dogs. But that was considered valorous.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't considered a waste of time. And shoe leather walking. Because who said do it? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whom they respected said go out and do that. Now, if I told them to go out and let's march, and they'd say, we ain't marching for you. You don't command us. We don't, you know. And if you go out there and do it by yourself, and they'll sit back and watch you get attacked and laugh. You see? And say you had it coming.
Right.
Because you were not ordained to move on behalf of the black people here in America.
Right.
See? And so, knowing that, I know why everybody's all worked up about this particular case of Trayvon Martin as opposed to any other black youth or adult that was beaten, murdered, and lynched in America. Because certain people have chosen this case as a case by which they're going to pivot some sort of activity, you know, some sort of a culture or political strife is going to be pivoted on this particular event. This is going to be a fulcrum of some major transition in American history.
Yeah, I believe that, absolutely.
That's what this is. That's what we're watching. because it doesn't, I mean, people getting, brothers getting killed every day. Why, what's so significant about this case?
Right.
So all of them are done on, you got cops shooting people on camera, you know, civilians. Hell, a brother got ran over with a truck a few years ago.
Yes, he did.
Then nobody, I mean, they just said, ooh, that show is messed up. And everybody went back on doing what they was doing. But this case, everybody just seen, they found out a fashion statement to make with it. And celebrities got all dressed up and, you know, and I was like, well, what's up? Who is this guy?
Tea and candy for you to buy. And
candy, right. They came up with so much discourse.
There was so many gimmicks associated with this situation. Because you're right. I remember when those youth, those white teens, ran that black man down. They beat him and then left him for dead. And when he got up to walk away, they, you know, drove over him with their truck and went and parked it.
Right.
In their parents' driveway, and that was it. You know, so there was no outcry, you know, and that kind of thing. So you're right. What is it about this particular situation that, you know, we've been told that this is something to, you know, have a public outcry about? What is it?
Right. And so we know, okay, some of our detractors are going to say, oh, because one of the guys got convicted. It was several people, and many of them got acquitted or weren't even charged with the murder of the guy. I think that was in Jasper, Texas, or something. And I would argue, who cares about what their courts put people in jail for? Because that's what we're dealing with this court, with this, in this discourse on sameness.
Right.
Black people in America are trying to prove that they are the same value as white people, and they want the courts to validate that.
Right, to validate us as equals. Right. And that is the point. That's
the point.
Entire point. You have a caller. This is, I believe this is Brother Mean. You're live with us. Good evening.
All right. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Can you hear me?
Oh yeah, we can hear you fine.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I didn't know if you could hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Yeah, you have anything you want
to...
Did you want to add anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was about to say the same thing you just said, is that we want them to validate the same, that we have this equality over and over again. We constantly do the same thing.
Right.
Pretty much said the same thing I wanted to say.
Well, what do you think it is, Brother Charles pointed out earlier, that there is something peculiar about this? Because, of course, as many people have pointed out, you know, what about this killing? What about that killing? What about, you know, the other killing? What do you think is peculiar about this one?
I don't know. I think maybe it was ignored at first, because it took a while before anybody even caught on to it. And different reporters tried to grab it, and then it picked up steam from there. But there was issues where there were folks pushing this particular case while other cases were going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We just had another one in Milwaukee where the guy just walks up and shoots the black boy.
I think I saw a video of that one where he goes into the house.
Oh,
is that the one where he goes into the house, comes out, and kills
him? I think the boy was taking trash out or something.
Right, he was taking his trash out. Uh-huh.
This thing was on tape, so
yeah,
so
it was taped.
No sensationalism with this. The other one was one guy's word against the other guy's. Well, not against the other guy's word, because the boy is dead in this case.
Right,
but there was no videotape. With
right.
the Trayvon one. This one seemed to pick up steam, you know, while other things were going on at the same time. This thing is constantly happening all over the place, but for some reason, this particular case, you know, picked up steam. And I think the right people pushed it in this case.
Mm-hmm. And see, one of the interesting things is that when we're talking about this type of treatment of our men and women and children, we are the I think the only people that I've ever heard say, we can't worry about what white people are doing to us because we do it to ourselves. They said that with the Paula Deen thing. We can't worry about her saying nigga. We say nigga 37 times before we have breakfast, right? When the Trayvon Martin thing happened, oh, we what about Chicago? We're killing each other there. And, you know, back in the day it was in Cali, you know, there were drive-bys all the time, this, that, and the other. But I've never heard, you know, Mexicans say, you know, we can't worry about, you know, when the white people kill us because we're killing each other all the time. No one else, that doesn't make sense to anybody but us.
Nobody else does that.
Who the hell does that?
Oh, we're so special. See, black people in America are so enlightened by their ability to consume expensive products made from European colonial society that that gives black Americans a sharpened perspective on how much, how insignificant black life is unless we preserve it too, then other people are allowed to trash it as well.
Wow.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That black people are extremely crazy.
And that is so bizarre to me. It's just a, I think it's a very overt indicator
of
our insanity.
Of self, insanity and self-hatred, same thing.
Yeah, self-hatred, right. It's so bizarre to me that people were saying, you know, black people, you're making a big deal out of this. We kill each other all the time. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God.
And why it sounds odd to me is that I don't kill other black people. So
I know
when you
that's
say
right.
we, what do you, who are you talking to?
Who are you talking
to? And I don't call I don't call other black people the N-word. So when you say we do this before breakfast, who are you talking to? You're not talking about me.
Well, I do.
So
the N-word, because I say nigga because I'm not gonna let the white man tell me I can't say nigga. Who the hell is he?
He dictates language now, and because
say language now. Now I got to walk around and be on pins and needles about what I say.
Right, because he established that was an insult, and so then we must defer to what the white man said. The white man says it's insult, so it is.
And all the black people that's all guarded about the N word are the ones that's supporting assimilation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know. So you know, but let me get back to the next paragraph here. And in the book, he says. He said, without a clear understanding of history, a people's culture and identity can be destroyed over time. The past gives us guideposts to prevent the repeat of errors. The mainstream slant on American history removes these guideposts and gives us the impression that African life prior to slavery was relatively insignificant. To propagate European greatness, Africans had to be physically and spiritually defeated. We had to surrender whatever sovereignty we had on the doorstep of democracy. And he goes on and said, we were forbidden to recognize or preserve our African cultures and heritages. We no longer were permitted to identify ourselves as Yoruba, Fulani, Ashanti, Hebrew, Nubian, Ethiopian, and etc. After centuries of being culturally looted to the bare bone, we were labeled with all kinds of derogatory adjectives. Some black people are now so stupefied that they consider it insulting to be called African, and other adjectives in my emphasis here, as though a change in geography alters the essence of one's genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're dealing with this right here, and I mean, we can extract these, you know, from this particular case, which you all have decided, feature in this discourse, is that we haven't learned nothing from history. He just said, without a clear understanding of history, a people's culture and identity can be destroyed over time. And we have a history of white-on-black violence as a dominant theme of African existence in America.
Mm-hmm.
And you got black people now in the early 21st century telling you that white-on-black violence is insignificant because black-on-black violence exists.
Right.
That's freaking insane.
Right.
Them kind of people, I don't even want them talking to me. If you think like that, please unsubscribe from everything connected to me. And I'm just going to say that publicly. I don't even want to know you. Right. Right. If you did forget, just, you know, we can just forget each other because I've already forgotten you.
Right.
And don't remind me who you are. But that's the reality. We don't want to reconnect with that. I was talking to the author of this book. We were talking about black people. We noticed around 2011 how everybody started getting, a lot of people, black community started getting so hopeful about the reelection of Barack Obama, they were beginning to neglect black issues. As the election, it seemed that he would be reelected.
Mm-hmm.
You and I noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how people were like, they were like, you know, listening and ready to like chop it up about, you know, black interest. And when they thought they was gonna get they thought they were gonna get recognized or get some greater integration into American political society, it was like, you know, I ain't got to unify with y'all, rest of you Negroes.
Right.
I don't need y'all like that.
Right.
Because I'm finna be an American for another 4 years.
Right.
So, you know, that's a serious problem. And them kind of people are so sick, they need to be dropped in the drop squad program if it exists. But I don't think it's enough programmers to work with all those people.
Right.
Too many.
Yeah, I don't know that... I mean, I don't know. That is a scary thought. You know, it's so many. But anyway, listen, I need to make a quick announcement because we're going into the last few minutes of the show. For those listening in the chat room, good evening to you, and thank you for joining us. Those listening live on the browser, you have to call in to hear the remainder of the show. You can call us right now. You have about 3 minutes. The phone number is 323-580-5707. Again, 323-580-5707, and we will see you hopefully next week. And be sure and join us on our community page at facebook.com/AK Beyond the Book. See you next time.
All right. Okay. Now, and you know, we spend so much energy trying to be with them and run away from ourselves. I mean, I've talked to you about, you know, black economics, you know, living in your own community, sharing, just sharing your life with your people. And one lady commented on the African Conversation page how near black folks, you know,
mm-hmm.
that it was, you know, I don't want to be around all this. I mean, like, that's the epitome of black life, is depression. And so what? I mean, that shouldn't be your argument. I mean, I was trying to tell her, maybe it's near your job. I understand. She was like, I don't live near where I work at. I just do it because I don't want to live near black folks. I'm like, you need to get that. You're on the wrong page. And, you know, that's a dominant thing. Some people closeted, had that opinion, you know, in secret, and some are public. But another issue you touched on. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we also have a problem with people lying a lot. And
mm-hmm.
when you talked about black-on-black violence, what we do, we see this a lot between with people on things like Facebook. When I was growing up, I was that person that you described. So this is how I know when folks are lying about they don't understand or these types of things, is because I grew up in the ghetto. I stole. I didn't like the people there. I couldn't wait to leave. You know, we don't see people admit this type of thing. So they'll go all the way around the subject. That when you start talking about black self hate, they start to lie. Oh, I love my people. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because this is where these types of things come from. You know, folks talk about what about black on black violence? The first crime I ever committed when I was a child was stealing from another black person. What was mm-hmm. I stealing from another black person for? I was stealing to buy my way to being white. It was for a pair of jeans. I think it was. Sergio Valente or Jordash.
Sorry, I don't know what just happened. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
For per pair of some type of Italian designer jeans, you know, that I saw on TV with them playing the commercial back and forth. You know, you got the look. You know, and this is the thinking that they have with our young people going through. And I eventually left home, but I couldn't wait to get away from all those Negroes. Mm-hmm. You know, flash forward, you know, some 20, 30 years later, you know, you're interacting with these people who are saying that's not the case when you already know it's the case. The question is how to fix it. Not the denying that it exists, or they look at young people and point to the young people like they weren't young themselves. You know, what were your feelings back then? If you were doing something wrong back then, what was your feeling? We don't interact with each other to really get down to the truth of the matter. What we keep doing is denying, and when we keep denying, there's no solution coming when we keep denying the way we do. You know?
Right.
But in your defense, I will say that you committed crimes based upon certain situations. I'm gonna say like, what the psychologist at UT said, it's the power of the situation.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Certain situations that you were placed in created a climate for certain kinds of activity. And the people whom you committed these alleged crimes against were the only people around to commit to be offended by your action.
Exactly.
So it's not like you selected them because of their ethnicity as opposed to anyone else. They were just there.
Mm-hmm. And they were, and let's look at what it was. I go downtown. I grew up in New York. You go downtown in New York and do it to a white person, and you're liable to go to jail. You stay in Harlem and you do it to a black person, and there's no consequence.
Right.
But minimum. Right. Yeah. Well, that's dealing with the same issue we're talking about, even though these cases that. Because the people who have the power, who run the judicial system, are the same people. They are going to enforce, if they have a bone of self-preservation in them, of course they're going to respond more severely and efficiently against a person of a different ethnic group.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Black people are the only people that do the opposite. We respond more slowly and inefficiently by a crime committed against us by a person of a different ethnic group.
Right.
Right.
Very swift. Tell you were having the conversation with someone about the quickness of.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I was talking with a relative, and I found out I made some headway with them. I was explaining to him, he was trying to tell me how he needed to be, how, you know, forgiveness of how we didn't need to be so retaliatory, and that was a problem, and I was supposed to be so mean and hard. And I told him, I said, if I punch you in your head, and I say, I bet you'd hit me back pretty fast and probably knock me on the side of that wall. And he said, but at first I would ask you why. I said, but have you bothered to ask these other people why? For all the offenses they've done to you and your whole family and your children born and unborn? I said, no. And not only why, I said, I bet you failed to respond to those injustices and those crimes in any significant way.
Right.
I said, and so right then, I've done this before, but I put him in a situation where he couldn't wiggle out of it, which I've done it other times too, but I believe this particular case, at least for the time being, he realized that he could not make any justification for his retaliation against other black males that he has retaliated for crimes against him, and his lack of retaliation against whites that have offended him. See?
Right.
And so
that's the serious question that we don't like to answer, and that is that we only know about recompense, reciprocity, all of these things. We only understand these things when it is against one another.
Oh, yeah, we get, we got disrespect. Ain't nobody going to disrespect me. Black folks get indignant.
Right.
And belligerent if they perceive any disrespect by another African person.
Right.
But when if white people disrespect them every day, oh, well, you know, that's how it is. We disrespect each other, so it's no problem for an outsider to disrespect me. And that's madness.
Absolute madness.
But I want to add this this section in here from the book. What is he's going to go into how Jewish Americans, as an example, how they support Jews in Israel that are non-Americans, and how we blacks, we have no allegiance and we have no sense of obligation to African people inside or outside of America or Africa. We have total. We're totally negligent and derelict in our duty to save ourselves. And he's going to illustrate that in the following passage I'm going to read. He says, "It has become a cliche to assert that we are all Americans. In these days of war, the word American has been used in the media over and over again as though it were a prefix. You commonly hear things described as an American this, that, or the other. Prior to the war, the emphasis on being American was not stressed anywhere near to the degree that it is at present. All this overloading is well and fine for the sake of nationalism, but consider the following question. Since there is an assumed sameness running through through the veins of all Americans, do you think Jewish Americans are more concerned about their fellow Americans who are Africans or about non-American Jews that reside in Israel? Think about this for a moment. For each year, the U.S. government provides Israel with at least $7 billion of taxpayers' money, just for the defense purposes alone. This money is earmarked whether you or I agree or disagree. With all this money going to defend Israel, 38% of all black Americans in America live in poverty, while millions of native Africans are on the verge of starvation and millions more are infected with AIDS. The commitment to fund Israel while our basic human needs in America and Africa go unmet substantiates a key fact about American democracy that we need to quickly familiarize ourselves with. And the fact is that the political interest of Euro-Americans will always supersede the assumed sameness that we supposedly have with them. Now, to answer the question, Jewish Americans are absolutely more concerned about non-American Jews in Israel than fellow Americans who are African. They lobby it for Israel, not black people. They promote Zionism, not Pan-Africanism. They immortalize their ancestors of the Holocaust, not our ancestors that perished in the slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever the state of Israel needs support or aid, Jewish Americans automatically lobby, rally, protest, raise funds, or whatever else is necessary. All of this is laudably exemplifies exactly what they are supposed to do. These actions and responses are known as acts of self-preservation, which are naturally and necessary displays of concern that regularly occur between ethnic groups and their homeland. Conversely, black Americans place the concern of other nations and ethnic groups above Africa. We know more about the gossip of England than the politics of Angola and more about the Minutemen than the Mau Mau. However, no ethnic group in America places black America or Africa above their homeland. Skin for skin, they will support their homeland before they support us domestically. In spite of all of this, black men still zealously put their lives on the line to militarily defend foreign nations. Yet no ethnic group on earth has ever risked their lives for us as we have habitually done for others. If my history is correct, I don't remember the time when the Vietnamese, Koreans, the Kuwaitis came here to militarily liberate us from slavery or segregation." End quote. Now, that's it. That's a mouthful. I mean, he has more on the thing and more on that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend all our time, we join the military. We know, understand that they take advantage of the poverty that they have excited us to, you know, to create for our, to perpetuate. I mean, so they created it and they convinced us to perpetuate it. And they get us in there. We submit and surrender our sons and daughters for brain, for further brainwashing, military brainwashing. And we act like it's totally normal to go and fight for every other group, and we don't think about ending apartheid, you know, or, I mean, militarily, whatever, standing militarily, which includes economic and other means. We don't think about it. We don't care.
Right.
We feel like we should, we'll take action whenever Master tells us to take action. Master let us know what's important and what's not important. And we still function the same way today.
That's right.
Because nothing has changed.
There you go.
Telling me fun.
I'm laughing because you just went in the next stage of my life. What did I do to get away from black folks? I went right in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Go over to that country and stand at that border. Go stand.
Right.
Why are you there? None of your business.
Right.
You know, all these young black boys stand at a border. You don't even know the history of that conflict. It's always white supremacy. But
right.
But you don't know the history behind it. And there to escape poverty, you run into there, where you're used again. You just finished
right.
being used, and you run in there to be used again. You know.
Right.
I went in there during the Reaganomics era. Running away from poverty. Running away from that cheese. You know.
We have no integrity as a people. We've lost
mm-hmm.
it. When you
alternative.
But no, I'm just saying, because when I was talking to you about, I read that passage from was it 2 Samuel chapter 21 to my cousin, and I was reading to him about how the Gibeonites asked King David. They said, "We want revenge. We want revenge for the blood that King Saul shed against our people." And David said, "Okay, let me go and arrest some of his relatives and let you hang them." You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That was dealt with properly. You know, we don't ask for no revenge. We say, and they say, and in that passage they say, you know, this is not a matter of silver and gold. They didn't want no money. They said, "Don't try to buy us off. We want blood."
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What black folks in America say? Give me the silver and gold. You can give me that. Matter of fact, I'll give you some more relatives to kill if you give me some more money.
No, that's right.
Matter of fact, I'll help you hunt down some more relatives and kill them myself. Matter of fact, you can come with me and we can kill them together.
Yep.
And
that's
I'll give you the money right back.
And I'm going to pay you back.
And I'm going to give you the money right back.
That's a deal of a lifetime. What white folks going to listen to you for? What reason have they to change being racist? You have provided no incentive.
Right.
Because being racist has the incentive of having all the wealth. It has a built-in incentive program. I can rape all the women, have all the resources. Well, what's, I'm sorry, where is the downside of that? Oh, your soul will be corrupted and go to hell. They say, you know, I'm not really using my soul anyway.
I can't buy this big-ass TV with soul payments.
I can't buy. And it seems that you can have all the soul and you can sing all the blues. I will exploit your blues playing.
Trying. I'm going to dance on the 2 and 4, and I'll see you at Circuit City. We got to go. It's about time to get out of here.
Right.
Oh, we back. All right, so we're going to be back next week, right?
Yeah, look, I think so. We'll be back tomorrow on Love and Black to talk about the past and mainly the future of polygyny.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so we're going to finish this book, this particular book, Foreign Sovereignty.
We may or may not talk about it. We'll announce what next week's program will be.
Okay. All right. Well, check the page, and we will next time we'll promote the shows ahead of time. But anyway, so we'll see you next week. Peace.